Well, all right then. Friday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. Proud to be here. I'm Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, as well. Doing what we always do on Wednesdays and Fridays, on Fridays in particular in this case, right? We call the show How Music Changed because we pick specific topics and we cover them to death, really. we try to cover as much about the subject as possible. And we have 250 topics that we hope to complete. That's really wishful thinking, I have to admit, but we're doing our best. And right now, we've just recently begun a series dedicated to the history of Pink Floyd. Today is part three. And call this show Losing Sid. Now, here's why. I mean, within months of making a statement that influenced the zeitgeist of the times, writing fantastical songs that would eventually grow to become timeless, Sid Barrett himself became lost. His intake of psychedelic substances had overtaken his ability to communicate. And in less than a year since the band's career started in earnest, with Sid at the helm, writing all of their best songs and all of their hits, it became obvious that he could no longer function in a practical manner. So this show features the last bits of his work as a member of Pink Floyd. And he will be missed, even just already at part three. While also, though, conveying the band's new problem of needing to find a replacement and to write material of their own now that they've lost their principal songwriter. Now, we're going to open up with a song called Matilda Mother. I'm not going to tell the whole story because I did a dumb thing on part two. I spent about 3 or 4 minutes introducing Matilda Mother, and then I played the wrong song. I played Flaming. And I'm like, that was dumb. But it was too late. It was what it was. So we're going to pick up by playing the song that I introduced then. If you want to hear the full story, all you got to do is go to our website, AmericanHitNetwork.com. And right there on the page, you're going to see the How Music Changed section in the top right. It's set up in quadrants. And you'll just see the Pink Floyd thing. And go to part two, and you'll hear this. It's actually really worth hearing, especially if you missed it, because the Pink Floyd era with Sid Barrett is incredibly awesome. But it's also such a small part of what they're about because he burned out so quickly. In short, Matilda Mother had Sid writing another children's song, a song based upon a children's story. And then he took the lyrics verbatim from another man's writing. But then they found out that they couldn't do it because he wouldn't give them the rights. So we had to change the words. And that is the Cliff Notes version of the story. If you don't bother to go back. But I highly recommend, if you didn't hear part two, please do go to the website, AmericanHitNetwork.com. Meanwhile, here is Matilda Mother.
Wondering.
Prince, Matilda Mother. Quite a piece of work, isn't it? I'm very impressed by that. I'm very easily impressed by anything that I hear by Syd Barrett because it's a rarity. He's such a rare human being. On that song, you could hear him. He's like a powerhouse of psychedelia, but he's also like this childlike genius at the same time. He's got such incredible creativity. To think that it like was all drained out of him in a matter of months is almost really, it is hard for me to comprehend. Now, the next song that we're going to play is among my top three Syd Barrett songs of all time. I would put Arnold Lane and See Emily Play, the hit singles, as...
It's definitely one of my favorites, too.
I mean, this is about as playful as Syd can get. The song is called Bike, and according to an old Cambridge friend, he stated that it was one of Barrett's oldest compositions, because he remembers him playing it at Roger Waters' house on Rock Road in Cambridge before the band had any fame whatsoever. This, though, is a little bit less like dreamlike or psychedelic. It's incredibly innocent, but also tongue-in-cheek funny. I mean, this song is definitely laugh-out-loud funny. Everything about it. And you just know that he is perfectly aware of that. It's not like he is an idiot savant. He's actually quite a genius because of the way that it works. Now, what's weird about the tune is the way it ends, which is really, this is like more or less Syd saying goodbye in a sense. It's the last song on the album. And by the time the second album comes out, which we'll be getting to, he's essentially eliminated from the band, with the exception of like of one track that I believe that he submitted. So the song ends with, or it basically, it's a mess. You hear that, like, it sounds like the band is kicking around an echo machine. And Peter Bowne, who was there at the session, says, "I'll always remember when I think I was in the studio when all of a sudden Roger's foot came out. Bang! I thought, God, that's going to fall apart." And this is followed by about a minute of random noises that are difficult to identify. Maybe it's a spinning bicycle wheel or different things being held up and an acoustic piano being strummed. And it sounds like somebody's knocking over a whole bunch of tubular bells and whistles, mechanical toys, just all this crazy stuff going on all at the same time. And then finally, it ends with this loop of quacking rubber ducks. And that's how it fades out. So the last minute of the song is just flat out weird. Pink Floyd noise as you would expect it. But the first 2.5 minutes is Syd on a roll with just pure genius, like innocence. And you got to hear it for yourself. Here is the last track on the first Pink Floyd album. It's called Bike.
Bike on the bike. Tear off the front is red and black. I've had it from
It's like two songs like plastered together. In a way, I wish they didn't do that to that particular song, though, because the Sid part is so engaging and entertaining. I love it so much. It's just such a beautifully innocent thing that he's gotten there. But it ultimately does make sense, as it's almost like saying, well, this is where Sid freaks out. However, so the album's done and finished, and it's a big hit in Great Britain. It went to a number 6 in the British charts. The Piper at the Gates of Dawn was the name of that album. We played most of it last week, and two tracks, of course, that we played so far, both from that album. So, with the band doing well on the charts, of course, EMI, their label, wants the band to put out a single for the Christmas market. And also because the group was going on an American tour, so they would have something to promote while they're on tour. But the thing is, the band really was wanting to focus on albums. They weren't really interested in singles. I mean, this is Pink Floyd. And eventually, as you would know, if you know anything at all about the band, that was pretty much their mainstay and their strength. They were never really a singles band from this point forward. But at this point in time, they're young and they don't have any real power of their own. So they need to more or less appease the record label. So the band's manager goes to the band and frankly asks Sid to write a hit, because he's the only one who's written anything that is even remotely commercial on the first album. All of the great songs are his. So he comes up with this idea about apples and oranges, you know, about things that are like so different that it's impossible to compare them. So the scenario, though, with Sid is that it's genuinely, we're talking about apples and oranges. According to the book, it says the narrator, in fact, the driver of a fruit delivery truck, notices an attractive young woman shopping in sharp shoes. And before long, a love story begins. Because it's a happy song. It's got a touch of Christmas. It's about a girl whom I saw just walking around town in Richmond. That was Sid saying that. Now, Roger himself says that the song got criticized a lot because Sid was already beginning to, you know, freak out a little bit. Now, Roger says that he thought it was a very good song in spite of the mistakes in the production. They figure the song was good, but the production is what destroyed it from being awesome, because the people on the board were not being as sympathetic as the people who were helping them when they recorded the album. So, as it says here, in reality, the birth of Apples and Oranges was a painful one for Sid. Tired and more or less befuddled by drugs, he was having difficulty coming up with new songs for the group. At the time, he was the group's only member capable of writing hits, and he was the one on that the whole team counted on to keep the Pink Floyd machine growing. So the song took a long time for it to develop. Andrew King, who was there at the time, said God knows how many people were depending for their grocery bills on the Pink Floyd. Add it all up, and there were probably 50 or 60 people whose livelihood depended on the Floyd getting in the studio, making a good track, and getting it out. And it wasn't happening. We were panicking. Now, in spite of the pressure, Sid did come up with Apples and Oranges, psychedelic song, of course, it's what he does, which relates to the atmosphere, sort of like what the Who did on A Quick One, according to, you know, some people, or maybe even the Beach Boys around Smiley Smile. You can hear that the brain is beginning to, like, crack away a little bit, and maybe that's what makes it a little bit uncomfortable. So, let's hear the track, their third single, Apples and Oranges.
Got a flip top, packing cigarettes in a pocket, feeling good at the top, shopping at shop sheets, walking in the sunshine town, feeling very cool. But the butchers and the bakers and the supermarket stores, getting everything she wants from the supermarket store.
Apples and oranges, apples and oranges.
the people, she's on time again. And then I catch her by the eye, then I stop and have to think what a funny thing to do, cause I'm feeling very thin.
Apples and oranges, apples and oranges.
I love she loves me.
If it wasn't for the production, I bet you that song could have been awesome. There's just like so much reverb that it's hard to even hear what's going on. They made a bit of a mess of it, I think. But still, you can hear Sid's genius coming through, his unique genius. But now, he suddenly stops writing almost completely. And they need a B-side for the single. So Rick Wright actually more or less raises his hand and says, I'll come up with something. So this is the first song that he wrote as an individual effort. Now, he also had like a bit of a, Sid wasn't the only one who probably suffered from all the acid, because like, you know, not everybody remembers the details too good, because there was an interview with Rick Wright around 1996, and he said that he doesn't know why he named his song Paintbox, but it's about the circumstances in which how the song came to be. He goes, Paintbox and another song called Remember a Day, which we'll get to, were done soon after Sid left, and we hadn't established the way the band was going to work. Sid, I'm sad to say, was no longer capable of working, so it came down to Roger, Dave, and myself writing songs. And I think it came later that we started writing them together. Now, clearly, Rick has got to be wrong, because this song was on the B-side of the single Apples and Oranges that Sid wrote. So it kind of doesn't make much sense. But this is what happens when the band loses their major focal point. Things become really scary, I think, because this is kind of what they're left with. Rick Wright's tune called Paintbox. Hang on to your hats.
To drink, sitting in a club with so many fools, playing to roles, trying to impress, but feeling rather empty. I had a
weeks. She would very much like to go out to a show. So what can I do? I can't think what to say.
Not a disaster. It's far from that, but unfortunately, it obviously lacks the childlike beauty of what Sid was doing. And now we've got to talk about what the band has to do about all of this if they're going to continue. So they found themselves back in the studio and they started recording around October and November. And it was during this period that the mental health of Sid began to take a disturbing turn for the worse. It was like steadily deteriorating, and he had moved to a new flat, which all everybody in the band thought it was a very bad idea. They called it the catastrophic flat. It was a nexus for underground and illicit activities where painters, musicians, eccentrics, mystics, and freaks mixed with film stars, pop icons, and Chelsea aristocrats, and that Sid, in Nick Mason's words, began to unravel. The band had a tour in Europe and the United States that was planned for the end of 67. But meanwhile, the group was witnessing Sid's increasingly erratic behavior on a daily basis, and they could do nothing about it. So they had to cancel Pink Floyd's involvement in the Windsor Jazz Festival due to Sid's health. And the other of the members tried to persuade Sid to see a specialist, and he did see a psychiatrist who eventually would say that, you know, he's schizophrenic. But now, there in the company with Sid, who was completely absorbed in his own inner world, incapable of communicating, and above all, totally unpredictable, that Roger Waters, Rick Wright, and Nick Mason decided to go on tour and wondering, what are we going to do with him? Because he's obviously allegedly taking the tour with them. That was an amazing disaster, explains Rogers. Roger Waters. Sid, by this time, was completely off his head. Indeed, Barrett was out of it to such an extent that he left his guitar behind before a concert in Los Angeles and remained mute when interviewed on the Pat Boone Show. It was harder to work with Sid because we couldn't reach him, explains Nick Mason. He was more absent every time, in both senses of the word. He would forget to appear at the gigs. When we were at a radio broadcast, he left the studio without warning. He wasn't showing up at rehearsals. In a word, he wasn't in the band. How did Sid end up in this situation, having led Pink Floyd so brilliantly on the road to success, and then barely 9 months later, after the band had signed with EMI, his fate was sealed after the, quote, Christmas on Earth Continued concert took place in London on December 22nd. Roger Waters, Rick Wright, and Nick Mason realized they had reached the point of no return and could no longer bury their heads in the sand. Sid had become totally uncontrollable and was holding back their career. What were the reasons for his mental deterioration? Drugs, obviously. Sid took a lot of acid. Lots of people can take some acid and cope with it in their lives. But if you take 3 or 4 trips a day and you do that every day, you're vulnerable. Anyway, it would eventually transpire, like I said, that Sid was suffering from schizophrenia. But in order to see this through to a successful conclusion, 3 possible solutions suggested themselves to the band. For example, like Brian Wilson in the Beach Boys, who at this time was no longer performing live, but he was still writing and working within the studio. That's a possibility. Or keeping him on as a musician, but supporting him with a second guitarist. Or asking him to leave. Those are the 3 choices. For the time being, they opted the second of these solutions, not the least because it avoided a clash that would inevitably be painful for everybody. Who do they pick? They considered asking Jeff Beck, but then the group realized David Gilmour. He was one of Syd Barrett's best friends, and they all knew each other, so they decided to ask him. The problem was Gilmour had really no genuine interest in Pink Floyd. That wasn't his style. He didn't like what they were doing. But he was seduced by their professional status. They were signed to EMI. That's a big deal. And they were growing, and their fame was getting popular. So he agreed in principle before accepting, saying yes around Christmas time. And then just after Christmas, I actually got a phone call. This is David Gilmour saying, where I was staying. I didn't actually have a phone, or they didn't know it, but they sent a message through someone else that they knew me for me to get in touch for taking the job, so to speak. No real discussion, no meetings, no auditions. They just said, did I want to? And I said, yes. And it was as simple as that. So now Pink Floyd, for this time being, is a 5-member band. But at the beginning of 1968, Syd Barrett was even more uncontrollable and less interested in what the band was doing. To all intents and purposes, he was no longer a member of the group. On stage, he put the minimum of effort into his performance, according to Nick Mason, seeming to just go through the motions. This lack of contribution was probably his refusal to take part in the whole charade. As he withdrew further and further, this merely convinced us that we were making the right decision. So finally, after about 4 or 5 concerts, with Sid not putting in any effort at all, they effectively agreed to get rid of him. They were getting ready to leave for a January 26th concert in Southampton, and the decision was decided to not even bother to stop and pick him up. Somebody probably said, shall we go and get Sid? And Roger probably said, no, please, let's not. And off we went to Southampton without him. And Sid's mental health didn't improve, and although he went on to record 2 studio albums, which we will get to in the future, he would gradually retire from public life, withdrawing to the suburbs of Cambridge, where he devoted himself to painting. He was presenting a brand new song to the group in 1968, his chance to maybe be creative. Now, this is how clever Sid is. Everyone gathered around him because he was about to teach them a new song, and this is like, finally, Sid is going to, you know, they needed it really bad. So this way they would learn the chords and the structure of the number. And the song was called Have You Got It Yet? So each time he pronounced those words, he changed the song. His band, it was impossible for them to follow him because they had no clue what was going on. He never played the song at all remotely the same twice. So the band is like saying, oh, I've got it. Like Sid was playing a joke on them, you know, called Have You Got It Yet? So that didn't go anywhere. But anyway, the change from the Sid Barrett period into the music of 3 architecture students was pretty dramatic. Their architectural vision of music flowered into great cathedral constructions taking up entire albums. Well, Sid was much more of a fantasy person, but that's where the next album takes us. It's called, excuse me, I know where I'm at here. I did know where I was at here, but I'm sorry. A Saucer Full of Secrets, of course, is the name of the second album, excuse me. And the first track on side one was written by Roger Waters, and it is called Let There Be More Light.
Thank you.
is the very beginning of the change in Pink Floyd with that track. Gone is Sid's innocence and playfulness, and in its place is a very early song written by Roger Waters, but you can already hear that it's got this sort of epic idea of being like a musical arrangement more than something which is lyrically phenomenally interesting, and like Sid is. This is my opinion. So, of course, and for what it's worth, Roger did become one of the best songwriters in the history of rock and roll as time developed. Just at this point in time, he wasn't there yet, just to be clear. And since I am calling this Losing Sid, I want to be able to make sure I get in Sid's tunes. So he did have two things that he contributed to the band at this point in time for the second album, but none of them were really followed up and completed by the band. The versions that exist are just very rough live takes in the studio. So it's unfortunate that they're not completed, because I think that they could have been pretty awesome. But let's play one of them right now, a song that Sid wrote called Scream Thy Last Scream. Oh boy.
Scream thy last scream, oh.
Now, that is not an official release. So, as you can tell, it's a very poor recording, mono recording, but it's taken straight from the studio take of the track, which was never formalized and released by the band. So, but because I want to dedicate pretty much the majority of this show to Sid and to his greatness before we move on, and then in future, you know, next week, and we will be moving through Pink Floyd as they grow and become Pink Floyd as we know them now. But the original Pink Floyd, I have to emphasize how much it was based around Sid for it to be clear. So that's why we're doing this. That song was called Scream Thy Last Scream. And there's one other of these mono recordings that actually got other people doing cover versions of it because, like me, they were monstrous Sid Barrett fans. And when they were able to find this demo or whatever, you know, this studio take on in mono, they just said, I know Robin Hitchcock has recorded this song, for example. It's called Vegetable Man. Next week, we're going to be Sidless. So I've got one more song that I want to play to cover Sid. But this
sounds
is
like a social disease.
This one is an official recording. But this history is absolutely crazy amazing. In a book called The Remarkable Roger Barrett, which was a documentary in 2006 about Sid, Norman Smith, the band's producer and engineer, describes in detail how this song came about. a song called Jug Band Blues. To the end of the song, when Sid was toying with it, I said to Sid, you know, Sid, I really fancy some extra orchestrations going on this title. So he said, oh, yeah? And I said, I hear a brass band. So he said, a Salvation Army band. And I said, why a Salvation Army band? I don't know, but really, I think I can hear that. A Salvation Army band on it. So, surprised, Norman complied with his wishes and gathered together about 12 or 15 musicians who he had to recruit. And it wasn't an easy thing to do, to bring them all into the studio. On the day of the recording, Norman got them settled into the studio while they waited for Sid, who showed up very late. But when he finally did make his appearance, Norman immediately asked him what he wanted the brass band to play. And his response was, let them do what they like, just anything. And he's like, the producer said, you know, Norman said, we really can't do that because nobody would know where they were or what to do. And Nick Mason said that pretty much in the end, that's how it had to happen. So Sid left the studio, leaving Norman to realize the songwriter's ideas all by himself. As a seasoned musician, Norman Smith finally decided to write out some chord charts so that the band could record its part. And it seems that a recording with no instructions, with Sid's wishes, was also cut, but it was the one that where Norman helped arrange it is the one that was used on the album. It's called Jug Band Blues, and it's the last song to be written and sung by Sid Barrett as a member of Pink Floyd. In it, you got to listen to the lyrics. He gives remarkable poetic expression to both his descent into schizophrenia and mental delusion, and also his bond with the members of the band. You'll hear it in the words of the song. He's pretty much thanking Waters, Wright, and Mason for even considering him a member of the group, even if he is no longer present mentally or physically. You'll hear those words coming from his mouth in this song. And in the second verse, the relations reach the point of no return. And he says things like, and I'm grateful you threw away my old shoes. Like, he engages in sardonic humor in order to like express his regret at no longer occupying a position as being the leader of the band. And this goes eventually gives way to him being disenchanted, if not even resentment, when he sings, and I don't care if nothing is mine. And I don't care if I'm nervous with you. All that remained for Sid Barrett then is how he ends the song, and he goes, I can do my loving in the winter, and then asking himself, what exactly is a joke? Incredibly sad. We'll leave you with the song, Jug Band Blues.
It's awfully considerate of you to think of me here, and I'm most obliged to you for making it clear that I'm not here. Wondering who could
I'm gonna go to the bathroom.